Sainz on pole, Perez alongside him. It's lights out and away we go. Sainz reacts quickest. Perez comes across to cover off Fernando Alonso, who's almost on the grass, but he's ahead of Sergio Perez. Sainz goes into the first corner. Then comes Alonso. Lewis Hamilton round the outside of George Russell. Perez has lost places right at the start. As on the run down to Eau Rouge we go now, and you can see a brilliant start from Sebastian Vettel, who's already alongside Daniel Ricciardo into Eau Rouge. Ricciardo just ahead of the Aston Martin. Over Radion we go, and onto the Camel Straight, where Carlos Sainz is a long way clear. Behind him comes Fernando Alonso, and there's the two Aston Martins squabbling, and behind Fernando Alonso, it's his old teammate Lewis Hamilton. Here comes Hamilton into the Lecompte chicane, and they make contact. Hamilton rises up into the air. He's made contact with Fernando Alonso. George Russell goes through. There's the Aston Martin of Lance Stroll onto the gravel, and that was Alonso and Hamilton getting too close together, tangling, but they both managed to carry on.
It looks to me as if Lewis comes in and pinches him a little bit.
Yeah,
that's not Fernando's fault. He was on the curb, under control, wasn't understeering across the road.
What an idiot, closing the door from the outside. We had a mega start, but this guy only knows how to drive starting first.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 954, August 29th. 2022. Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say Max sprinting to success. Honey Badger is out of the bag. Next year he may sack up with K-Mag. Circles are in. We shall go around and explain gladly. Now back to the Saint of Stella Artois.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Red Bull is now in full control of championship. 15 years later, we still have the Fernando LCH show. Ferrari turning into a circus act, and the host attended the Good Guys event in Pleasanton, California, and I'll have some comments on the show, the cars, and the 90th anniversary of the 32 Deuce. And just a reminder, we need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know, you want to. Nasser, welcome back from Belgium. How are you?
I am doing very good, sir. Thank you. How are things on the left coast?
We're very busy here on the left coast. You know, there's always activity, car activities, and of course, F1 Weekly being the media mogul we've become, we get invited and we must attend. So I went to the Good Guys big car show and event in Pleasanton, California. I'm sure you know about this event, Nasser.
I do, and I have been to Pleasanton many, many, many times.
That is an awesome thing. So there you have it. It was exciting. What was great about it is after Monterey Car Week, where you're inundated with the Europa, the Machismo, and the Exotica, you go to Good Guys and you get America. So it was very good. A lot of American cars. And of course, there was some crappy stuff. We had the car from Foster's Chicken Farm. Remember the commercial? It was a Plymouth, by the way. That was there. Very exciting. But there were also cars that were definitely worthy of Pebble Beach. And my favorite was the Porsche 911 with a Chevy 350 in the back. You know, that always gets you right in the kisser. But no, great American event. It's always refreshing to see America. Unfortunately, attendance was down I'm afraid the baby boomers are slowly, slowly, as MacArthur said, fading away. So it's getting tough out there, folks. We need young people into cars, but the 90th anniversary of the Deuce, the 32 Deuce, the Beach Boys song, the awesome Hot Rod, Bonneville Flats, racing in Riverside. So a lot of history. It was very exciting, Nasser, and I loved it. But man, Max Verstappen has taken full charge of the championship.
Well, you know, Ferrari has done it again, and so has Max. Why am I not surprised? And your favorite LCH was flying high at the start and shot down in turn 5 after rubber-to-rubber contact with his ex-teammate, El Machismo. Another why am I not surprised? But at least this time LCH created the chaos. Normally the word chaos is associated with the other driver, and LCH was man enough to fess it up. And Mr. Rogers, going back to the Pleasanton and Americana, you know those cars, Detroit heavy metal from 60s and 70s, the old Chevrolet Impala, the station wagon, Pontiac GTO, Boss Mustang, Dodge Charger, the hatchback. Man, I love those machines. Absolutely. Actually, the Ford Boss, you know, the Ford Boss Mustang hatchback.
Yeah, the Boss 302, awesome car, still raced in vintage racing across the globe.
That car, along with Ford GT40 and Ferrari Daytona 365 GTB4 from 1972, these are my all-time favorite cars. But we shall return to Belgium. Okay, now, of course, with what happened between these two guys, slings and arrows are flying every which way on the interweb. I'm not here to take sides or defend any driver, but I do enjoy comments made by passionate fans from both sides of the fence. And of course, one side is calling Lewis crybaby, this and that. But you know, Hemi haters are loving it, and one can understand that. But we have to listen to music from across the street also. Especially musical beats that have some reality in it, not just an opinion. And the tune I like was a posting saying, this is in reference to Nando claiming Lewis can only win from the front. The gentleman pointed out that Lewis has won more races, 42, from outside the pole position than total number of wins scored by Alonso, which is 32, I believe, if I have my voodoo math correct. You know what they say, Mr. Rogers? When you point a finger at somebody, three of your own fingers are pointing at you. This is getting a lot of press coverage, and Toto has given his opinion. And how do you look at that incident, racing incident, or you blame Lewis through and through?
Total racing incident. We've seen this happen on this chicane or corner many, many times. It happens. Not only that, but there seems to be a tendency when... So the problem is, you know, Fernando is famous for his relationship with Lewis, and Lewis knows that. I mean, Lewis was there. They've been together for 15 years. These guys know each other so well. It's hilarious. And I have to admit, and Lewis admitted, it was his mistake because Nando had the inside line on the curbs. I mean, but that's an easy mistake to make, trying to get through the first lap at Spa. It's happened many, many times before. It's not a big deal. But the best part, well, I don't want to say it's the best part because I think it's not good and he should now become more gentle and loving like George Bush. But, you know, the insults and the ranting and raving by Fernando, which is great for the album that I'm putting together, Ranting and Raving Punk Rock Fernando, it's hilarious. I mean, I know he's hot and Latin and he's got to blast off, but it's pretty funny stuff. I mean, he always regrets it deep down in his gut at the end, but there he goes again. So now we not only do we have great stuff, but we have more. So everybody should be happy. We have more Fernando blurbing that I can use on the podcast, basically, now, sir. And I'll probably use this for many years to come to teach the new and young folk coming in to the sport and to show them how brutal it can be.
Yes, and you know, the best part of that Nando's comments was him saying he was closing the door from the outside. That was very interesting and very true. But you know, these two guys, they raced lap after lap like this in Hungary last year. Nothing happened. So, you know, I agree with you. This was a racing incident. That's why no penalty was given. And, you know, a little bit of push and shove spices up the show, and we get more cute comments from Machismo. The ball keeps rolling. Where it's going with him, nobody knows. But anyway, so much. The guy provides a lot of fun even when he's not winning. I have to say that.
And you're right. I mean, I hate to say this, but this was a full-blown domination by Red Bull, who, if you listen to Red Bull's radio calls and Ferrari's, there's a big difference. But this race really wouldn't have been what it was without the Fernando LCH incident. And the great part about it, I mean, this has been going on for so long. These guys are still fighting, and we're up at the front of the spear. So I think it helped to bring this race up to the forefront, where we would have been bored if it was just Max, Max, Max. And not only that, but watching Ferrari crumble in front of our eyes in live time. And all of a sudden, Albon decides to take a bowl of Wheaties and go bonkers. I mean, that was awesome. There was some good stuff in this Grand Prix. I mean, even, which blew my mind, but maybe they were doing it to cheer up Fernando, but even the Aston Martins are starting to look a little more competitive, maybe even up there with McLaren or above. So there's a lot of good news from all this. There's a lot of bad news for some people. But listen, you can't dominate forever. Toto knows that. You should welcome this pause, this moving of the pendulum. Things will move back into your space eventually. But this is awesome stuff because it's great for the sport, especially now we're going into Zandvoort. Now, I do have a problem with orange smoke everywhere, but what can you do? They only have Gouda cheese over there.
Well, Dr. Marco went one better than Alonso, speaking after the race about totally dominating performance by Max. He said, thanks to Mercedes for the rule change. So that was a nice sling and arrow from the doctor. But you know, as far as Max is concerned, man, halfway through the race, you know, I was very surprised that people were saying he will get it to the podium. Honestly, no surprise for me that he won, okay? But amazing, you know, halfway through the race, he had said bye-bye to Carlito and Checo, and these are the people who started from the front row, and of course, rest of the field also. But you know, people may go gaga about this performance, but I can only say this kind of excellence is expected from drivers who grace the grid once in decades. The Senas and Schumis of the world, and for sure LCH is also in that group. And so was Nando in 2005 and 2006. That Imola victory, I will never forget. You know, Peter Windsor called it, and he has seen a lot more than we have seen combined. He called this performance class of the field. You know, he mentioned, he has a YouTube channel, he mentioned an interesting historical fact, saying that Max's victory, listen to this, Mr. Rogers, Max's victory was the first time since the final race of the 1959 season, which was just 90 minutes down the road from here in Sebring, Florida, and the first race of the 1960 season, which were both won by Bruce McLaren, that a driver has won two races in a row after starting from outside the top 10. Absolutely incredible. I say the new professor is in town. Max is not discovery of the decade. He is discovery of the century. He is the 21st century Fox. This horror flick for the competition is an MGM production, as in Dr. Barco's Grand Machete. Chop chop till you find the top seed. And this winning harvest will last for many seasons. And man, I was thinking, this is happening after Honda officially bailing out. Now I understand they are still providing technical support and Red Bull is paying for it. Can you imagine if they have a change of heart, they come back and put more resources in it? I mean, this can go on longer than LCH, Halcyon days. And speaking of Lewis, he may or may not get ahead of the 8 ball, but I pity the drivers who are desperately seeking their first championship success, or a third championship, as in the case of Juan Desperado, whom we love very much. And that was Zinger and Chip of the Day from the right coast. That chip you gave it to Toto Wolff last week is not, has changed hands. I'm sorry, has changed shoulders.
Awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Let's keep that chip standing up and doing its job.
Okay, sir, before we get your expert opinion and get into the nitty-gritty details of the race, shall we do a quickie on the collie?
Absolutely, Mr. Rosa.
Thank you. Well, they say first cut is the deepest, and that's what Max did. On the opening lap in Q3, he put in a lap over half a second faster than anyone, which reminded me of a program on ESPN, First and 10 in Your Face. Thank you very much. Misery loves company. Both Max and Charles Leclerc enduring grid penalties and not starting in the top 10 of the grid. Did you expect Charles Leclerc to, like, come through the field and maybe, if not beat Max, finish second?
No, but I expected him to plow through the field and have less issues with tires than he did. I hate to say it, but I don't think Leclerc is going to be at Ferrari much longer. He can't take it anymore. I think his psychoanalyst, his psychiatrist, and his nose and throat doctor are all telling him, you need to get out of that terrible atmosphere.
Yeah, but you know, at least he has a winning car. Where can he go? So that's the real issue. And so, of course, with these Utes getting penalties, front row was now what I call battle of number twos, Sainz inheriting pole ahead of Checo. Best part, this was really the best part, BFF from season 007 on the second row. Machismo with his new L plan called L bailout and LCH. Now, speaking of Albon earlier, he did a very good job and qualified 9th, which I think is very impressive for a Williams driver. Anything you want to say about the collie? Anything you like, you did not like? Anything surprised you?
Obviously, I love Fernando next to LCH. We know as soon as you see that grid, you know you better get your cup of coffee, you better get your coffee cake, and prepare, because this is going to be an awesome start and it's going to be exciting. And the funny part, Fernando said the last front row start he had was sort of stinky and he let Max go really quickly. Well, like he didn't have any choice. But this time he wanted to be a little more elbow out, you know, more machismo, more Latino. So it was, I'm telling you, the whole thing was very, very interesting. But listen, we're, folks, count your blessings that we're in the period where these two guys are still in F1 and they'll be gone pretty soon. They'll be at the old folks' home. So enjoy it. Love it. As a spectator, I live for all this stuff. And LCH is going to bounce back. I think that win is still going to happen this year. Nasser?
Oh, I'm surprised you said that.
I'm a pretty nice guy, Nas. Deep down, I take after my mom.
Well, hopefully it will happen and it will be very good for him and for Formula Uno. Okay, sir, as far as the race is concerned, we'll take a quick look at it, how it folded. Harum scarum from the start. LCH out after a love tap, well, I shouldn't say love tap from BFF, but after a love tap with BFF, Nando, because Nando for once is totally innocent while fighting for second. Nando on team radio. That was so beautiful. What an idiot. This guy only knows how to drive starting first. That was a serious, serious sort of a dagger straight from Pamplona. He got it from some El Matador. Then Latifi does what he does best, causing Bottas to take evasive action and getting stuck in KT later. You know what? Nothing against Nicholas Latifi. He really doesn't need to race and sweat it out for 2 hours. He needs to retire. Daddy has billions and billions of dollars. You know, the best part I read about him, that his daddy has billions and billions, and his mother's side has even more money. So what is he doing driving a car in 20th place in a field of 20 cars? Can you explain that to me, please?
Well, it's called... Well, anyway, he's gotten the Pastor Elite. That's the golden trophy. And his first name is now Pastor Latifi. And I can't take it anymore. You're right. I mean, how many... What do you... Come on, man. I mean, this is... It's laughable. It's mockery. I hope he's out of here. And tell, you know what? Go to F1Weekly.com and you could be forgiven for your crashes by donating to F1 Weekly. What do you think, Mass?
You know, that's a good idea. That's a good idea. And he has all the zeros in his bank account, so it shouldn't be a problem. But anyway, that brought out the safety car. And Max was already up to 8 when the safety car came in on lap 4. So it was leading Sainz, Perez, Russell. Next was Nando in 4. Max 6th on lap 6. He started on soft like Sainz. Lap 8, Clark, Max in 3rd. And when that happened, I said, good evening, buenas tardes, Señor Sainz. I knew what was coming. His teammate was 16th, but Leclerc did stop for tires during the safety car period. And I knew that, you know, you were talking about Leclerc moving up. I had an inkling that he will get on the podium. He should have gotten on the podium. But one of your Tweety birds said to me, well, between him and the team, they'll work out a plan to get Max more points. And that's what happened. Lap 10, Max already had race leader in gunsight and was pumping the fastest lap. No surprise once again. Lap 11, Carlito in, Perez leads, but lap 12, Max is adios amigo. Carlito came out in 6th. Max came in on lap 15, comes out in 2nd behind Sainz. Checo 3rd, Russell and Leclerc completing top 5 at that time. Didn't take too long. Lap 18, normal service restored. Max back in charge on top from 14th on the grid before the race was even halfway through. Maximilian, impressive, but not surprising. Lap 20, Ferrari and Leclerc. This was another beauty. Lap 20, Ferrari and Leclerc questioning each other on tire strategy and when to stop. They really have no answer to Red Bull and Max. I think it was Julian Palmer who said on the telecast that both team and driver have lost faith in each other. And that's pretty much true. Lap 21, Checo makes it Red Bull 1-2 after passing Sainz Jr. Lap 25, Max had a 10-second lead over his teammate, and the following lap, Carlito came back in the pits, taking on hard tires. He was followed by his teammate, and he took on mediums. Georgie Boy was now in 3rd behind the charging Red Bulls. Lap 28, Perez in, goes out on hard tires, comes out in 3rd, Russell now 2nd, over 22 seconds behind Max. Sainz was 4th, followed by Sebastian Vettel in 5th. And 22 seconds, it becomes very, very obvious at Spa. Lap 30 of 44, George in and comes out in 4th. Red Bull bring in Max. Move of the day. Now, this was very, very impressive when Esteban Ocon passed both Pierre Gasly and Sebastian Vettel on lap 35 when they were all fighting for position. Did you like that move by Esteban Senior?
Yes, very nice. A little dedication to Mika Hakkinen. I can dig it, my brother. But yeah, awesome. I mean, Ocon is waking up. Well, because now he knows it's his team, Fernando. He doesn't need that papa figure anymore. And the bizarre part, if Gasly could be going to Alpine, and these two guys hate each other.
Yeah, but Pierre said that they have buried the hatchet.
Oh, they've buried the hatchet. Huh. I'd love to hear that in French.
Yes. And, you know, Pierre Gasly is from Rouen. And you've been there, right?
I have.
Yes. Ferrari in the, this was also very, not surprising, but interesting. Ferrari in the closing stages provide another drama for the world to witness. Leclerc was brought in for a tire change, which resulted in a tremendous dice with Nando for fifth, which would go back to Nando after Leclerc was penalized for speeding in the pit lane. Another why am I not surprised moment from Scuderia. And you know what was interesting? They brought him in to get one extra point, right, on fresher tires. Even then, he was half a second slower than Max. So, very, very sad day for Scuderia. So, this is win number 9 of the season for Max. Second hat-trick of the season, total number of wins, 29. And as Checo Perez said, Max was flying. He was on a different planet. There are no words, you know. This is just going to keep on going now. Next race is the Dutch Grand Prix at Zandvoort, and in the post-race interview with Martin Brundle, Max said, let's see what we can do there. I think I know what he will do. He will finish ahead of 19 other drivers and possibly drown any remaining Ferrari championship aspirations before we reach Yas Marina. You know, I think Leclerc is like 98 points down on Max, so dishes are totally done. His championship lead over the second place hombre is now his own teammate, Checo Perez, and he is 93 points down. No matter what language you speak, it is ciao, adios, sayonara, or in plain simple English, the party is over for Scuderia. Sir, this is my observation. Max's performance really proves what Dr. Marco said about Max when he first came into Formula One. The only driver you can compare him to is Senna, which says a lot about Senna, which says a lot about Max. Max is really delivering to the competition what I call the Herb Alpert and the Tavana Brass effect. Whipped cream and other delights, race after race. I say enjoy the music. This beat will go on for quite a while. Yes, and yes. Yeah, so what we have Taste of Honey is a album is a track from the album Whipped Cream. So what we have here is the actual whipped cream, okay? Okay, moving on. So sir, on the podium, Max Perez, Sainz, 2 Red Bulls, 1 Ferrari. On the podium, Russell 4th. Machismo took a hit to the body, but kept going for a top 5 finish. Very impressive. Leclerc 6th. Less said the better, he is a good chap. Ocon 7th means both Alpines in the point. Seb 8th, and I hope he goes out on a high, and a high would for him would be keep scoring points and maybe get a podium, and I will be happy for him. Gasly 9th and Albon 10th. In the championship, here is the scoreboard. Max 284, Checo 191, Leclerc 186, Sainz 171, and Russell completing the top 5, 170 points. Russell is only 1 point behind Sainz. Very, very impressive. In the Constructors' Championship, Red Bull 475, Ferrari 357. Third with 316 points is Mercedes, Alpine fourth with 115, and McLaren fifth with 95. Anything else you would like to add, sir, on the race? Any comments?
Spa is a great race. Spa was awesome, awesome. I mean, we saw what developed. We're all talking about it with passion. To lose this race would be ridiculous. I'm glad it's on the calendar again for next year so we could see Fernando and LCH attack each other again. And I'm telling you, I love it. I love it. And now we're going to Zandvoort, which is great, and then Monza. I'm telling you, folks, we've got an LCH show with Fernando for the next few weeks. So cherish it, love it, and hug it.
And sir, Spa is in because South Africa is out. Talk is cheap. Spa was set to be dropped in favor of a Grand Prix at Kyalami, which is a beautiful track. But when Liberty Media said to the promoter in South Africa, show me the money, they referred Chase Carey and Domenicali to F1 Weekly's financial institution, Lincoln Savings, and their CEO, which stands for Chief Embezzlement Officer Charles Keating. Good news is we will have Spa in our lifetime, at least for 2023. And sir, shall we take a look at Danny's Dilemma before we go into the break?
That's a good idea. Danny's Dilemma is a sad one. Everybody is like, all the drivers like him, but apparently Norris is pretty machismo about it.
Oh, yeah, he's speaking his mind. And, you know, it's a case of Aussie in, Aussie out. Piastri's fate will be sealed when the Contract Recognition Board announces their verdict after meeting today, which is Monday. There are three lawyers who are required to submit their verdict within 3 days, and teams are obligated under the Concord Agreement to abide by their decision. So by the time this thing is posted, we will know which way it's going. Some are predicting Piastri may end up without a ride in 2023, and I certainly hope that's not the case. He has already tweeted to the world he will not drive for Alpine. Question is, what will he do if the ruling by CRB goes in favor of team previously known as Renault? In this scenario, he will be doing a Duran-Duran, dance into the fire, and go down the slippery slope of the Alps. However, if CRB declares there was no valid contract between the driver and the team for 2023, then we have a case of Aussie in, Aussie out, and Piastri will be teammate to Lando Norris. They say be careful what you wish for just might come true. Halfway through the 2023 season, we will find out if Piastri has what it takes to rattle the cage of Norris. Which brings us to Danny's dilemma. It's never a good feeling when you lose your job, especially when it's performance related and the Western Union man knocks on the door with a one-liner from the boss. Your services are no longer required. He must be wondering what they say in a song. On a stormy weather, don't know why there's no sun in the sky. You know, I'll tell you, I saw him in the pre-race interview. I have never seen him so beaten. I mean, he really looked hurt. I sympathize with him because I like the guy. I think he's a tremendous talent. But Danny can take comfort in enjoying the moonlight with all the millions and millions of dollars he has made. People are saying, you know, just before the recording, I saw a news item, I don't know if it's true, that he has already signed with Alpine. So I went to autosportracingnews.com, grandprix.com. I did not see any confirmation, but he is the best talent available for Otmar if he can go and sing. You know, he's from Detroit, so he should not have a problem singing Baby Come Back. But do you think he'll go back there?
Yes, for sure. He had success there. It was a good relationship. This is his last chance. This is it. I mean, they don't come up very often. I mean, Ricciardo is wonderful, but he's not a Fernando that just goes on and on and on and on. This is it. It's his last chance. And he'll be listening to my favorite band, Huey Lewis and the News.
And he will be the news, you think?
I do.
You know what interesting information? All these rumors are coming. You talk about Gasly going there. Now they're talking about Red Bull is interested in releasing him and possibly taking in Colton Herta in their program. So who knows what will happen. Do you think it's a good idea for Colton Herta to leave a race-winning seat and go to Piranha Pool and drive for Toro Rosso, well, now AlphaTauri?
Well, it's a good idea if he can go there and dominate. But if he doesn't dominate and show Dr. Marco that his testicles are very large like Max's, then he's going to have a problem. The whole point is Dr. Marco now has Max as the template of a wonderful driver. It's a lot for Herta to rise to. And if he has the balls to go to Red Bull and give this a shot, I think that's wonderful. But there's a lot of risk for sure.
Yes, and I think what he should do is give a call to send a text to Scott Speed. And both of them are from California, so maybe they can get together in Manteca, where Scott Speed comes from, and there's no shortage of hot dogs in Manteca. I think it'll be a very, very bad move. because, you know, and it's just the way Formula One operates. They're going to give him five races, and if he cannot beat Yuki Tsunoda, they're going to say, oh, look, here comes another American. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And on the other hand, if he can't beat Yuki Tsunoda, then for God's sakes, go back to America.
Yeah, and the thing is, if he goes with Zak Brown's McLaren team, Zak wants him to succeed, and that's what you want, a team owner that wants you to succeed, and that'll give you a couple of years to get going. But if they did not give, if they're letting Daniel Ricciardo go before his contract is up, you know they're not going to have more patience for Colton Herta or whoever comes with big dreams. You have to deliver. Otherwise, the Colt 45 comes out.
And the Colt 45 comes out, and then the brown bag comes out, and then you finish with English 800. So you know it's ugly, it's smelly. And on that note, Nasser, I think we should take a quick break, and we'll be back after these brief messages.
Sometimes I almost wish Italian Swiss Colony hadn't brought out these two new California table wines. They're tearing my kitchen apart.
I say Italian Swiss Colony Chianti is lighter.
And I say the Rheinskeller is lighter.
Ah, but new Italian Swiss Colony Chianti is so light, you can enjoy it glass after glass, even with your heavy Wiener Schnitzel.
But new Rheinskeller is so wunderbar light, it makes taste good even your chicken cacciatore.
I still say Italian Swiss Colony Chianti is lighter.
And I say Rheinskeller.
Chianti.
Rheinskeller.
What I say is, let the customer decide which new Italian Swiss Colony wine you prefer. Red Chianti, light in the Italian style, or white Rheinskeller, light in the German style. After all, you're the one who's always right.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the King, the Sultan himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. And sir, this is very good news. I'm very happy, which also happened over the weekend. Circles are in. Audi has confirmed they will enter F1 as engine supplier in 2026. They will confirm team partner by the end of the year. Most likely it will be Sauber, as Alfa Romeo announced they will end their collaboration with Swiss-based team after the 2023 season. A chap by the name of Marcus Duesmann, he is the CEO of Audi, he said Audi powertrain has to be specially designed for this chassis, so that's why they have decided to do a separate program than with Porsche, even though both companies come under the Volkswagen umbrella. Audi, they are very proud to say, will make their engines in Deutschland Uber Alles, while the Porsche powertrain will be based in Milton Keynes at the present Red Bull Honda operation. Audi is also interested in having a German driver. This is serious Achtung baby for young Germans in karting today. They have 4 years to go, jawohl, and get up to Schumi speed. Schumi as in senior Schumi. This is very good news for F1. Big companies bring big budgets and top technical people to the party. Hopefully this will help the future Kimis and LCH and Sebs of the world. Kids who have more talent than zeros in the bank account of their papitos. Sir, as you know, I'm also a fan of Junior Series that takes place and at Spa VLs at F2 and F3 action also. Formula 2, previously known as Hapidos, sprint race on Saturday, Red Bull Junior from New Zealand Liam Lawson was the winner. I will not be surprised if he is in Formula 1 with AlphaTauri if Pierre Gasly moves to Alpine. Second in the race was Mick Doohan from Australia. Logan Sargeant from Boca Raton, Florida crashed out late in the race. He is in the Williams Driver Development Program. Feature race on Sunday, big win for Jack Doohan over championship leader Brazilian Felipe Drugovich. Last year, Jack won the Formula 3 race here. His papito is MotoGP legend Mick Doohan. Liam Lawson, winner in Saturday's race, was third. Logan Sargeant finished sixth. In the championship, Drugovic is trying hard to be the only Brazilian to take this championship in modern era. He is leading with 205 points. Second is your fellow Francais, Mr. Rogers Théo Pourchaire. He has 162 points and he dropped out of the race. So looks like he is the Charles Leclerc of Formula 2. And Logan Sargeant, the American kid from Florida, he is third with 127 points. You know, we interviewed Logan Sargeant when he was in karting, so hopefully one day we will catch up again, hopefully in Formula 1. Now we come to Formula 3. Saturday sprint race winner Ollie Bearman of England. He is in Ferrari Driver Academy and definitely one to watch. Last year he won both the Formula 4 championships in UK and Germany. Brad Benavides in 8th was the highest placed American driver. Sunday's feature race saw first ever win on an F1 weekend for a driver from Barbados, Zane Maloney. His Trident teammate Roman Stanek was second, and Saturday's winner Bearman was third. The championship is pretty interesting here, Mr. Rogers. 3 points separate the top three. French-Algerian driver Isaac Hadjar leads with 106 points. English chap Bearman is second on 105. Another French driver, Victor Martin, is third with 104. And Charles Leclerc's brother Arthur is fourth on 101 points. And he is also in the Ferrari Driver Academy. Man from Texas, or should I say cowboy from Texas, Jack Crawford, is 6th with 80 points. Only 2 rounds remain. Sir, do we have time for some F1 factoid, the Spa saga?
Absolutely. If it's about Spa, I want to hear every little nuance.
Good. The very first Grand Prix at Spa took place in 1925. The winner was Antonio Ascari in an Alfa Romeo, and of course he was the papa of Alberto Ascari. And Alberto, 27 years later, would win at the same place, driving for the same car, Alfa Romeo. Actually, he was not driving the Alfa, he was driving a Ferrari. Okay, American success in Belgian Grand Prix. This is pretty impressive. 1961, Phil Hill in the Ferrari. 1967, Dan Gurney in his own Eagle. Both were victorious at Spa, while the third and final American to win Belgian Grand Prix, Mario Andretti, took the checkered flag in 1978 when the race was at Zolder. And Zolder is the track where, unfortunately, Gilles Villeneuve lost his life. The historical significance of this victory in 1978, it was the first win for the ground effect Lotus 79, which carried Mario Andretti to the championship in 1978. Okay, sir, next, still on Spa, walking on red water, turning water into maiden wins. A look at some of the drivers who took their first F1 success at this majestic circuit. Longest circuit in Formula 1 these days. Jim Clark, 1962 with Lotus. Bruce McLaren in his own car in 1968. Now we come to 1992 and probably the origin of Bravo, Bravo. Michael Schumacher taking his first win in a Benetton under the flashy, dashy, dynamic leadership of Flavio Briatore. And 2019, we had Charles Leclerc in a Ferrari scoring his first win, following up with a victory at Monza. So that was very impressive. Sir, we continue our musical theme here. F1 CEO Stefano Domenicali doing a Bob Seger and going against the wind. He is quoted as saying, F1 very unlikely to have female driver in next 5 years. And Sebastian Vettel, of course, did not like that. What he said will not go down well with omnipresent PC Brigade, but it is racing reality. Jamie Chadwick has been the dominant female racer in single-seaters, but any time she has raced in the mainstream Piranha pool, she did not have the bite nor the speed of a shark. I say, best way to bring a lady, competitive ladies into top tier, is to promote racing with a dedicated budget and agenda in karting for girls only. Now, this was, I was surprised as gentlemen. I mean, yes and no. Just few days ago, Toto Wolff, of all the people, was quoted as saying he was surprised that Williams did not have the TF to give Susie Wolff a seat in Formula One. He thought she was absolutely deserving. Having followed DTM series with keen interest for a long time, where Susie raced for many years, the result, aka wins, Joe are just not there. Susie Wolff, previously Susie Stoddart, is from Scotland, but she is no JC or even DC. So if you don't have the power of JC-DC, there will be no surge to Formula One. What say you, El Machismo, about the L plan?
Unbelievable. First of all, Domenicali, he said something that was worse than what you quoted. I know you were paraphrasing, but he said that it would be I'm paraphrasing as well, but it would be a lightning strike in hell or something before a female would be driving. I thought that was inappropriate because he is at the top of the F1 pinnacle. He's the boss, and he should be saying loving and wonderful things of all people. So I thought that was bizarre. Now, the Susie Wolff thing, boy, Toto. But you have to admit, her love for him has convinced him that she would have been the Senna of female drivers if she got the Williams drive. So let's leave Toto alone in his fantasy, and I'm sure he thinks about it every night.
About his fantasy or about Susie Wolff?
Exactly.
Okay, sir, now we come to your favorite question. Who's going to win? I mean, what a silly question, but we have to keep the tradition alive. Who will win the Dutch Grand Prix?
Besides Fernando.
No, I think this time he won't have a chance, unfortunately.
Damn it. That's true, because I think LCH is going to take a grid penalty for a new combustion engine unit. Fernando will be all by himself at the front. But no, it's going to be exciting. I mean, obviously, this is Holland's love affair with Max Verstappen. If you're complaining about orange smoke at Spa or orange smoke in Austria or in Hungary, well, we're not going to be able to really see the race. It'll just be orange.
And yes, sir, and with that we come to today's musical mondial, and in celebration of Max's uber domination in Belgium, which is the land of his birth, because, you know, his mom is from Belgium, and that's where he was born. And by the way, Lando Norris's mom is also from Belgium. So in order to celebrate his complete domination of that race, the dream is fading away from Scuderia. We have a lady from the Netherlands by the name of Miss Sandra Riemer singing, "The Party is Over." Thank you for listening. Please enjoy.
Good night.
Going on, and he was mine, seems really to me.